Up first, though, is Nicola Gaston, a materials scientist at Victoria University of Wellington, where she works on nanoparticles. In other words, the science of the very small.
A nanoparticle is simply something that's very small. So a nanometer is something which is much, 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 much smaller than a meter. But from my point of view, because I deal with nanoparticles from the other point of view as a chemist, I think about atoms and building materials up from individual atoms. So I think of tens or hundreds or thousands of atoms being nanoparticles.
What can we do with them? Why are scientists so interested or excited by nanoparticles?
In general, it's because they have a whole lot of surprises. So their properties change really, really dramatically. For example, some of the nanoparticles I'm interested in, you can add an atom or you can take an atom out, and that changes things like the melting temperature.
Is it not just because you get to play with really fantastic toys to play with these really
tiny? Well, all my work's on computers, so that kind of might seem really boring, but the ideas behind what works and what doesn't work are really, really interesting.
So what particles, what nanoparticles do you play with then?
Mostly gallium. In general, metals. Metals are interesting because it's not just the number of atoms that matter, it's the number of electrons that matters a lot. So I spend a lot of time just counting electrons and things, which is fun.
How do you count an electron?
You count them, literally, with your fingers, depending on how many there are. With a computer, more commonly.
What's the goal of your research?
The goal is really just figuring out mysteries, really, that exist in the literature on nanoparticles. So things that have been done experimentally, but that we don't really have a good understanding of. And that's in particular what motivates my work on melting.
How can you apply this? Where am I going to get some value? Is it going to be smaller cell phones or faster broadband or tastier kebabs? Where's the value for me?
Well, I talk about melting, and that's kind of a good example because everybody knows what it's like for a thing to melt, and that things melt at a particular melting temperature, so ice at 0 degrees, for example. So the general paradigm is that when you make something really small, it gets less stable in some sense. And so if it gets less stable, then it becomes easier for it to melt. And so nanoparticles melt in general at much lower temperatures than bulk things that we're used to. And so there are real consequences for that. I mean, I do computational science, so you think about Moore's Law and silicon computer chips. If you make those small enough, that has to affect their melting temperature at some point. And understanding why and understanding how is really important.
Now, why have you got a cup of tea there?
At the moment, it's because I'd really like a cup of tea, but I won't drink it. Unfortunately, I played with it earlier, so I really shouldn't. I'm going to take the tea bag out because it might just get in the way, and I'm going to take the tea bag out with this really ordinary spoon. I've got it there because I'd like to demonstrate what happens when you play with a piece of gallium. So I've got another teaspoon here, which
can
is...
Can I just have a look at this? So this
yeah,
is a.
This is gallium. I've got to say I'd never heard of gallium. I thought it was a type of boat.
It's a galley.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so this just is a silver spoon, effectively. It's about the same weight as a normal teaspoon.
Yep.
And this is made of gallium?
That's made of gallium. I made it myself, so I can... Oh!
Okay. Have you...
Whoa!
I bought a spare for a reason.
I have just broken the gallium teaspoon. What cost? Is that cost of New Zealand taxpayer? Is that your research budget for next year gone?
I'm going to have to tell Frank Natali, who gave me the gallium for that teaspoon, that you broke it. I do have a spare, so I did bring another one for good reason.
I'm going to
look disapprovingly at you now. So shall I head on with the...
Yeah.
So tell us, why have you got a gallium spoon?
So I've got a gallium spoon because I'd like to show you what's different between this spoon and the spoon that I used to pull the tea bag out with. So this spoon makes a nice ding when I ding it on the glass. If I do this one carefully, it makes a very similar sound.
One's a stainless steel teaspoon, the other one is the gallium teaspoon.
And if you inspect it, you've still got some pieces of gallium over there, I think. You can
gallium shrapnel.
You can scrape it with your nail and it, don't eat it.
It's too late. He's eaten it.
Goodness, I knew I should have done the safety talk first. No eating the gallium teaspoon. But it just has this one curious property, which is that when I stick it in this glass of tea...
You're going to stir the tea with the gallium spoon.
I'm going to stir the tea with the gallium spoon. And then I'm going to...
Oh!
Oh,
I might have lost some of the gallium spoon already. And I didn't break it.
It's gone.
Yeah, it's gone. I'll see if I can get it to... to become slightly more
liquid. So where's the gallium spoon appears to be dissolving or disappearing? Where's it gone?
It's just hitting the bottom of the cup.
So it's melting?
It's melting, yeah.
This is a metal.
It is a metal.
That has melted in a cup of tepid tea.
Yes, the tea's been there for a while. So
what's the tea made of? Well, that's a pretty ropey coffee in New Zealand, but blimey, I won't go near that. Is it just the temperature doing that?
It is just the temperature.
And why does gallium melt at such a low temperature then?
Well, gallium melts at such a low temperature because it has a very strange structure. So instead of being composed, like most metals, in a structure where all of the atoms have pretty much the same environment, they're sitting there interacting with each other in a nice isotropic, nice symmetric way. In gallium, they form sort of a covalent bond between pairs of atoms, and then those pairs of atoms arrange themselves in a much more complicated structure than you'd have with other metals.
And why does that make it melt more easily?
Well, it means that it behaves a little bit more like a molecular compound, so something more like ice, perhaps, where you've got molecules which are arranged into a solid, and you've got relatively weak interactions between those molecules holding the crystal together. And so molecular compounds tend to melt at lower temperatures than something like a metal.
I think the Victorians used to do that, didn't they, as a sort of party trick?
It's quite a good party trick. I'm kind of inclined to pour off the tea and see what's left in the bottom.
Is it very poisonous, though? If you were to drink that, would you be in trouble?
Oh, I wouldn't want to. Okay. The tea itself probably doesn't have much gallium in it at this point.
So you were mentioning that, you know, this might have relevance to computers and things. So how is this relevant to making better computers?
Well, my research is not so much focused on understanding the bulk, but I'm interested in nanoparticles of this stuff. And in contrast to the bulk here, if you have 30, 50 atoms of gallium, then you can show experimentally, and that's been shown experimentally, that you have melting temperatures which are much, much higher, so 600 degrees.
Oh, so it loses this funky behaviour.
It loses this funky behaviour when you make nanoparticles.
So most things, when you make nanoparticles, the reverse is true, but
yes.
Gallium actually, for some reason, becomes harder to melt when it gets smaller.
Yes, so something completely different is going on, and we know that because of the experiments that have shown it. What we don't know is why. And to answer why, you really have to understand how it is melting, what is happening between all the atoms as it melts. And we can really only get at that sort of information by doing what we call ab initio simulations, or first principle simulations, where all we're putting into the calculations we're doing is what we know about gallium, which is that it's got a nucleus with a charge of 31 and 31 electrons, and then we put a bunch of those atoms together in a computer, and we simulate the way that they interact at different temperatures. And then if we can reproduce the experimental results, the experimental melting temperatures, then we can go back in and see how they're actually melting.
And once you can understand that, does that mean we can make maybe other nanoparticles or particles of gallium which don't melt at really low temperatures?
Yes.
So we'll be able to have better functions for our nanoparticles?
In principle. I mean, you might not be able to change what you have exactly with gallium, because that's a function only of the material itself, but it definitely gives you tools to understand and to predict what would happen to different materials.
Hey, thanks so much, Nicola. Nicola Gaston and the fabulous disappearing teaspoon, which I've ingested a bit of, and feeling okay. Nicola Gaston from Victoria University of Wellington.